Matthias in with a different crowd that I guess he's been harassing for quite some time now.
Can you comment a little bit about that that situation?
Well, there's Jerry, of course, and
talking about Jerry Herman.
Yeah, he hangs out front of the liquor store.
Jerry Herman, the street minister who's been sort of targeted by the sheriff's department.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, I see him there all the time, and you know, he doesn't really cause any trouble. He's there and he talks to people. But he doesn't really cause any serious trouble. I mean, he's just there. I mean, maybe a little annoying at times, but he's a good guy, you know.
Uh-huh.
Hangs out. And there's, you know, the other kids that hang out, and they're all good. You know, they don't cause any trouble, really. They're just hanging out.
So you think Thurber mistook perhaps these two smoking cigarettes for what he regarded as people who were supporters of Jerry Herman?
Well, I don't know, because one of the girls, Mara, who was one of the girls, stopped. She was on her break at Safeway wearing her Safeway uniform, her hat, her name tag. I mean, you know, she was on her break, so I don't really know. I think he was more or less just targeting the front of the coffee shop there, anybody who happened to be there.
Is he still on the beat out there?
Oh, yeah.
And is he still doing the same thing?
As far as I know, in fact, one day we were sitting out front talking about it, and some other girl who happened to hear us recognized his name. He apparently did the same thing to her but a couple weeks earlier, and you know, found her smoking, yelled at her, called her a spoiled brat, and wigged out on her, and you know, basically made her miss a job interview and then dropped her off saying good luck at your interview, knowing that she couldn't make it because
of him. You mean he arrested her and put her in the car?
Something to that effect. I don't really know the whole story.
I remember hearing
As far as I know, he did put her in the car and take her to where she couldn't make it to her job interview and then...
Dropped her off on the road?
On the road. I heard up Old Tennessee Road. I don't really know the whole story.
Okay, well, we'll wait on that. But here you were seeing your girlfriend being taken. Was she handcuffed?
She got handcuffed after he caught the warrant, yeah.
And then what happened?
He walked her back over to the car, and like I said, he was kind of wigging out on her, and I was opening my mouth saying, you know, why do you have to stop her for smoking, you know, why do you have to do that, you know, this is ridiculous, it's Christmas Eve, you know, now she's going to jail, there goes our Christmas, you ruined Christmas, thanks a lot, officer. And he replied to me, why are you so mad at me, did I kill Jesus, is what he said to me.
I see, sort of giving a religious slant to the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, kind of taunting me, and then I told him that offends me. I said, you know, why did you have to say that? I don't like it. It offends me. So he said it again. He said, what? All I said was, did I kill Jesus? And, you know, and he asked my girlfriend, because I was, you know, kind of not really like, I was making a point not to cuss at him.
Uh-huh.
Making also another point not to get, you know, within a good, you know, 10-15 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, you know, I was questioning, going, you know, do you even have the right to stop and card somebody for smoking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so basically he put her in the car and turned his attention towards me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, obviously he didn't have to deal with her anymore.
And then what happened?
So he turns to me and he came walking around
actually,
the car.
Before we get there, Brian, what happened to the other woman?
Okay, he basically let her go. Back to work. She was late, and he wouldn't give her a note saying that he detained her, making her late. He wouldn't really do anything for her, and her boss was getting on her case for being late off her break.
Mm-hmm.
And he wouldn't really do anything to help her. He basically just said, deal with it. Here's my card.
This is Deputy James Thurber we're talking about.
That's right.
Go ahead. So what happened then when he...
And so he walked Gene over to the car and put her in the car. And then he turned his attention towards me and walked around the car, you know, closed in about a good 15 feet, and he got right up in my face and started wigging out on me,
told
me to shut up and blah, 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 blah. And so he gets up in my face, and this is the first time all afternoon that there's been less than 15 feet between us, and now there was probably 2 inches between us.
So he had closed the distance to 2 inches?
Oh, yeah. He was right at nose to nose yelling at me.
And what was he yelling?
He was telling me to shut up and you know, I don't know. I don't recall exactly what he said. It was basically more or less, shut up. You're going to, I'm going to arrest you now or this or that. And I took a step back into another officer I didn't even see behind me.
Right.
And right when I stepped back into him, he grabs my right arm and twists it behind my back, mm-hmm. and pushes me up against the, you know, walks me over about 5 feet to the police car and shoves me up against the back of it.
And did he tell you you were under arrest?
He didn't really tell me he was under arrest, actually. What happened was I looked back at him over my right shoulder, which he was twisting, and I basically said, "What are you doing? Why are you grabbing me? Why are you touching me? I didn't do anything. You can't touch me." And I said, "This is assault, isn't it? Why are you grabbing me? I think this is assault. You can't touch me." Mm-hmm. And he said, "It's not assault when you're being detained." And so I asked him, I said, "What am I being detained for? What did I do?" And he said, "You won't shut up." And I said, "What is all? It's your problem. You don't shut up. You don't know when to shut up."
So he didn't give you a specific crime other than talking without a license?
Pretty much, yeah. Basically, I was talking too much. I mean, I wasn't cussing at him. I wasn't making any sort of threatening anything. But I was voicing how I thought it was ridiculous that he was harassing anybody for smoking a cigarette.
And then what happened?
I understand if somebody's 18, under 18, smoking a cigarette, to cite them and ticket them, but he doesn't need to, like, cause a big scene.
And you've been listening to an interview with Brian Clark, who's been describing a December 24th incident that happened out at Aptos in Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center, where he was arrested by Deputy James Thurber. We have an incoming call here. We're going to talk a bit more about Thurber in a moment, but first let's catch that call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I want to talk about Thurber also.
Okay.
I have a problem with him also.
Talking about Deputy James Thurber?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
We have a van parked outside and Oregon plates. And he started giving us tickets for abandoned vehicle. He accuses us of staying there. This is John Hernandez, right, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he scales. And he starts...
You and your wife live in a van?
No, we don't.
You don't?
Don't.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're outside the street. There's this van parked.
Mm-hmm.
He starts giving tickets. He gave us about, I'd say, 5 tickets in abandoned vehicle, which it always moves every day of the week. So he comes around sniffing around one day, and I'm outside ready to fix a tire, change a tire.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes Thurber, tells me to freeze, get away from the van. Who am I? What are you doing here? Where are you from? Are you from Oakland? I said, my name is John Hernandez. What's going on? There's an investigation going on. That's what he tells me. Then he tells me that go to his police car, you know, go by the car, and then he starts interrogating me. Where do I live at? What am I doing here? This Thurber yelling at me.
How long ago was this, John?
This is about 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I made a police report on it also, but it was really aggressive.
Where did this happen?
This happened by the flea market.
And what kind of an investigation was he supposedly making?
I have no idea.
And you say that he had ticketed you multiple times?
About 5 times.
All at the flea market?
All in the same place. Same parking space. Same block.
Mm-hmm.
But ticketed me for no tickets. They just, abandoned vehicles. So, you know, they are tickets, so you write, you know, to them and tell them that the vehicle's not abandoned. So he still keeps on doing that. But anyway, one day I was fixing the tire, about ready to fix the tire. I go outside to fix the tire. He comes, starts yelling at me. He tells me that I'm under arrest. And I go, "What are you arresting me for?" And he goes, "Oh, I don't know. You must be wanted somewhere." Before you know it, I'm inside the police car. Still, I'm not going to the police station. I said, "Why don't you just arrest me, take me to the police station?" He says, "Oh, well, he finds out that I'm not wanted. There's no warrants on me." So now he has to let me go. So I go out, so I get a geek. I finally get out of the car. After he starts interrogating me and all this, where do I live at? And do I live in Oakland? But he's super... So I get out of the police. I get out of the police car. And I say to him, "Now, do I have the permission from you to go to fix his flat tire. And he goes, he got all mad. We walked away from the police car. He starts yelling at me. And when he starts yelling at me, he starts walking towards me. He gets in front of my nose, our nose are touching. He starts waving his hands at me. He thought I was going to hit him or whatever. He was waiting for that.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't do anything. I just told him, you know, I'm going to file a complaint. I know all about you. You have a rap sheet. You're bad. So I went down to the lieutenant police, to lieutenant.
Uh-huh.
I talked to his superior. But, you know, when you make these reports, you know, like you say, make your police reports and all, it's a big joke. Why? Because the superiors are the same way as the underdog. So you got these dogs barking at people, but there's nobody punish them or tell them anything by the law what to do.
So you went down
they
to
just, so listen to this.
You went to the sheriff's office?
So I went to the sheriff's office.
Complaint.
Made that legal complaint, went upstairs, talked to the lieutenant. The lieutenant goes, oh, well, there's nothing to complain about. You don't got to make a legal complaint. I said, oh, I do. So we, the next day we go, bring the complaint over. We had, you know, filled it all out, brought it in.
Uh-huh.
The lieutenant goes, well, they didn't even know what to do with the complaint at all. The sheriff department.
Do you remember?
They had
name?
No idea.
Do you remember the name of the lieutenant, John?
We got it somewhere in here.
Wasn't,
not really.
Wasn't Sergeant?
Well, it doesn't matter. You know,
John. John, was it Sergeant Joe Cervantes, by any chance?
I don't know. A tall guy, heavy set.
And this was not Santa Cruz Police, but the deputy.
The sheriff department.
Mm-hmm.
You go upstairs and explain to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Thurper did to me, you know, like got in front of my face. I did the same thing to the lieutenant. The lieutenant jumped right away, 4 feet away from me, and said, "Stop." I said, well, at least you could do that. But when Thurper was doing that to me, I didn't have the chance to move forward, you know, 4 feet away, just like he did. And I didn't like that, and he didn't like that either. So the lieutenant goes, well, and he laughed about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the lieutenant that they shouldn't have any police officers aggressive because he wanted to find out where I live at. And you know the guy who just got shot? Well, that's the kind of aggressive that he is also.
Mm-hmm.
When I think the police department, the sheriff department, when you got aggressive people like that, you got to get them off the force.
I hear you,
because
John.
Because they're super aggressive.
I agree. And we're going to talk
about there.
We're going to talk a little more about James Thurber as well, because as you know, he has quite a history. I'm going to talk to him. Talk about him a bit. And
but he should be fired, and that's why, you know, if people instead of complaining, like, you know, go down, so, you know, like we did, and make a legal complaint. So something happens, it's a legal complaint, so already, you know.
Well, the police department, not just
the sheriff department.
Yeah, not just the police department, but the sheriff's department itself, as I mentioned on
it's
the
corrupt.
As I mentioned on the air, when we file complaints against Deputy Fitzgerald, who jacked up a 59-year-old woman for having medical marijuana, twisted her around a pain compliance hold, left her screaming in pain at the door of the courthouse where there was a metal detector when she simply wanted her cannabis club card back. That complaint completely disappeared in the bowels of the sheriff's department. And I imagine the same thing may have happened to yours.
Oh no, we got a copy from it, and we got one of the sergeants.
Oh, I got a copy too. I went in three times, and I got three different copies. But they had.
Oh, we got the original copy.
When we called them back, so do I for mine. They had found no copy of the complaint.
Yeah, but did you get a sheriff to sign your complaint?
We had
a sheriff sign our complaint.
Good. Well, keep up.
And that's the main thing. If you have a sheriff sign the complaint, then
right.
You can go back to the same sheriff who signed the complaint. Then
right. Well, of course, the whole process of filing complaints is good to make a record. I'm glad you did.
Right. That's the idea.
What we need to do is really take these people into small claims court for damages, because that's the only way they're going to be made accountable, and they're going to have to spend some of their own time in court. I'm got to go. Is there more you want to say?
They don't spend time in court because they're, you know, they get paid for it.
Well,
okay. Matt, bye.
Thanks a lot, John.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was an activist who's been working on a number of issues both here and up north, and I want to thank John for calling in. We're kind of rushing on a schedule here. I apologize for cutting you off there, John, kind of moving right along. Getting back to the Brian Andrus shooting, before we do, let's talk a little bit about James Thurber. I've mentioned James Thurber on the air before. Thurber has actually arrested me in the past. He was a bailiff in court when he arrested me. I was trying to turn in a form to the clerk of Judge Stevens' court.
I believe it was Judge Stevens Court. Actually, it may have been, it was the court where he currently holds holds the chair, which is out in one of the modular courtrooms in the in the county courthouse area. And Bailiff Thurber refused to take the note to the clerk who would take it to the judge, which I'd done in past courtrooms as a matter of routine. I was actually making an audio recording for personal use under 980C of the California Rules of Court, which allows you, by the way, to make a tape recording for your personal use of a court proceeding, provided you don't use it for broadcast use or as any kind of official transcript. And it's very useful to have an audio recording of what goes on. Some courts allow this, other courts get huffy, but this court had never had a problem with it. He, however, refused to allow it. I then attempted to take it to the clerk. He blocked my way and said, if you take it to the clerk, I'm going to arrest you, something to that effect. I said, okay, well, let's fill out a complaint here and now. And I began writing on a piece of scratch paper on his desk. He immediately announced I was under arrest for petty theft, because apparently I had been writing on a piece of scratch paper that was on his desk, which was an error on my part, and two other charges involving contempt of court. So these charges were all dropped. I sued him civilly, and the case became a wash. He also has been involved in, he assaulted a defendant in the City Hall sleepers protest in 1996 in court. Pepper sprayed him, brought him down, had him tried on four charges, all of which were dropped. So Thurber has quite a record. There's a number of other instances of harassment. And in fact, I'm hoping we can put together a wanted poster of this man, detailing in great detail exactly what he's been up to. So I want to thank John and thank Brian Clark for getting the specifics together around Thurber. And hopefully, when his record becomes known, other people who have been abused by him will not be afraid to speak up and will bring their cases not just to the Sheriff's Department, where nothing ever happens, although I guess it's good to keep a record going, but to small claims court and maybe even more serious municipal and superior court levels. So that's the Thurber situation. It's sort of a brief update on that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz on 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobe's peer Robert Norse. Call-in lines are open if you want to call me at 423-5361. We're about to have a new guest in the studio. We still have with us Doug McGrath, who's going to be appearing at the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday. Doug, I guess you were pointing out some interesting facts about the Brian Andrus case, that apparently if witness Rick Peterson is to be believed, that Brian Andrus went, actually he wasn't present when that happened. It was, I guess, Shari and her son RJ. If they're both to be believed, the Brian Andrus went down on the first shot, is what you were saying.
That's what it seemed like to me. I'd like to even get it a little bit more clear. It seemed to be so much different. But before I really, I don't want to give anyone else's testimony, actually.
Right. Well, so that's a question that's going to come up. Let's take this phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, Robert. How you doing?
I'm good. Sounds like Skidmark Bob Duran.
That's who I am. I just want to let folks know, I don't know if you told them already, but David Silva is taking people that want to, I guess, sign for the camping ban, or I mean, against the camping ban, out in front of the Holy Cross Church.
And so, where exactly is Holy Cross, for those who
where the hell is that? Where the hell is the church? That's kind of funny. I guess that would be on top of the hill where Water Street turns into Mission Street. If you're leaving downtown area, if you go up, I guess Water Street, it turns into Mission, then that's where the Holy Cross Church is. I don't know the address exactly, but if people want to go sign the camping ban, I would suggest to do so now.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to encourage you to go to Holy Cross Church again. We're talking at, what, this is on High Street, or this is on, no, this is on...
It's on Mission.
This is on Mission, right at the top of the hill, right?
Yeah.
Right before where the Highway 17, between 17 and where the town clock is, right?
Yeah,
you move up. You move up from the town clock, and right before you hit Highway 17, there's the Holy Cross Church.
That's it.
So we're going to play a little bit of David Silva's interview on that subject right now.
Right.
Thank you.
And I think he's also going to be on Tonight's News on Channel 35, because they're interviewing him, too.
Excellent.
Okay, have a good day.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
You were on the line with David Silva.
Yes, you are.
Hey there, David Silva.
Hi, Robert.
You're a local activist concerned with the sleeping ban ordinance, which currently regulates, I should say, prohibits sleeping at night in on all public spaces, pretty much. Right?
And private spaces. It prohibits sleeping from 11 p.m. to 8:30 a.m. anywhere in the city, public or private.
With the exception of fenced inside yards.
If the private sleeping, or camping, as they're calling it, because they're calling all sleeping camping, is behind like a 10-foot wall and not visible to any neighbor, then you're allowed to have your in-laws over.
You can also be in a backyard, and it doesn't have to be invisible. That's another reality.
I think you're wrong there. I think it has to be invisible. There's a certain requirement. Backyard too.
Well, in any case, it certainly is prohibited in many areas of town, and I guess they made a slight modification in 1995 when they allowed three people to sleep in their vehicles in church parking lots with the permission of the churches, but not much has been done with that. Do you have any figures on how many churches actually allow people to sleep in vehicles?
I keep hearing church something like 4 or 5, and so we're talking probably
12 vehicles.
Yeah, 12 vehicles.
12 or 15 vehicles.
Yeah, 15 vehicles, three people, no more than three people.
For the last, for the last 3 or 4 months, you and dozens of others, let's be generous, at least perhaps a dozen others, I don't know how many people you've got involved.
Well, I'll tell you, we've got 80 people out there with petitions. Some of them have, sure, only one or two petitions, but I mean, even with people with...
These are petitions.
Petition packets we have.
These are petitions to repeal the sleeping ban.
Yeah, it's an initiative that will be on the ballot in November.
And that is an initiative which, in essence, will strike down a portion of the city's camping ban law, correct?
It'll amend about 1/64th of the camping ordinance. It amends that part of the ordinance that says sleeping is camping. It also allows sleeping to be regulated in the residential and beachfront and beach commercial areas. But in the process of regulation, we're not allowing the city council to again criminalize sleeping. So this will permanently decriminalize sleeping in and of itself.
And you're actually, you've acquired quite a number of supporters and endorsers for this initiative. I've heard about Governor Jerry Brown and Geronimo Pratt, and who's the most recent high-profile figure you've been able to...
Well, Mel Mason from NAACP in Seaside, and also former city council person there. Father Mike Marini of Holy Cross Church we got this week. That's been my job. We all, back in September, divvied up jobs, and my job was the coordinator of outreach. So that's what I've been mostly doing, is ambassadorial work. Of course, I've been trying to push this signature gathering drive, too. But mostly been doing ambassadorial work, and I must say, it's been pretty easy, to tell you the truth.
You've also carried your...
One of the things hard with everybody is that most people are answering machines. You don't call people and get people anymore.
Yeah, I know. I've noticed that.
Yeah.
You've also been successful, or had some interesting conversations with some of the chief opponents of changing this law, namely the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Yeah, it's been hard to get them to respond or talk directly for quite some time. We've had a assistant chief of police a few months back responded to the Fish Wrap, and that's a newspaper, a university newspaper, and just did the party line that this initiative would cause more litter, almost as if homeless people were litter. Then I've confronted the chief of police directly, and he says that we need this law to control other bad behavior. And I said, well, then have laws against that other bad behavior. He says, no, we need this law. He says, we don't impose it against people that are just sleeping. We don't do that. I says, well, that's the law. He says, no, we make sure there's some bad behavior going on. I says, well, then there should be. Well, we went back and forth, and he just says, well, I don't want to argue with you politics. And personally, I think the chief of police is being political, and if he's going to be that way, why doesn't he run for office?
In what way is he being political?
Because he's not arguing, he's not doing the role of a civil servant, which is to argue the case on the merits of the case itself and on the facts. He's refusing to call this the sleeping ban and constantly says things like, we are repealing the camping ban. As a matter of fact, just yesterday, the watch commander, going with the party line, told KSBW that repealing the camping ban would cause all kinds of litter. Well, we're not repealing the camping ban. We're making a very small amendment to the text, which is repealing the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. It also gets the law to cover up with a blanket after 11 p.m. and before 8:30 a.m. If you cover your child up with a blanket before 8:30 a.m. in the morning, you will get a ticket of
$160, or if it's you do it twice within 48 hours, it'll be 6 months jail. So we're really, you know, locked horns with them. But finally, we got KSPW TV last night to acknowledge that they were talking out the back of their head and changed that on the news last night, 11 o'clock version, that we are repealing the sleeping ban.
Well, you've actually had numerous confrontations with the local monopoly newspaper, the Santa Cruz County Sentinel, right?
Well, I don't know if you want to call them confrontations. They certainly felt like confrontations. They're supposed to have ended fresh and friendly. We're supposed to have a fresh and friendly news start with the Sentinel because they've actually edited out our public service announcements and scratched out wherever we put sleeping ban and put the word camping ban, even to the extent of leaving out our name of our organization, the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, because that would say sleeping ban.
Well,
we are trying to scare people that we're repealing the camping ban.
That's just what the police department has done as well. Apparently the Sentinel and the police department seem to be similarly minded about calling your ordinance change the camping ban repeal, when in fact the top of your ordinance and the city attorney's description of your ordinance talks about it as a sleeping ban repeal.
Now, the city attorney did say that we could have the option to slap an injunction on the Sentinel, but we do have a promise from the Sentinel they won't do this anymore. Of course, the result is that they're not covering us at all, and that may be all for the better.
Now, last week, we had one of our guests, environmentalist and Pelton Street activist Jillian Greenside. You know Jillian, probably. She's forthright speaker at City Council, very concerned about the Rotkin majority's determination to parcel off Pelton Street to the rich house builders and dump the homeless garden project, actually successfully doing that so far. She, however, had comments about the sleeping ban, and she herself seemed to be reluctant to support a repeal of the sleeping ban, instead suggesting that what homeless people needed was not the right to sleep anywhere and everywhere, although she didn't use that phraseology, which is more the Rotkin phraseology from our council member Rotkin, but the right to sleep in a safe place like a campground, which she proposed might best be done up at, Granite...
I'll tell you, wherever you propose it, that of course goes without saying that there are social services that need to be provided, and the current...
Gray Whale Ranch is what I'm thinking.
The current... Oh, boy.
She proposed that.
Oh, man. The current existing camping ordinance in Section 2 allows the City Council to issue permits for this kind of activity wherever they see fit. So that's up to the City Council. This initiative is not about social services. This initiative is about human rights. We are saying that it's a human rights violation to ticket anyone or jail anyone for the simple act of sleeping in and of itself. Now, if there's other activity going on, whether it's camping, then it violates the camping ordinance. If it's littering, there's obviously ordinance against that. Laying across the sidewalk, there's ordinance against that. Traffic violation, you know, no parking signs, there's existing laws against that. We're not changing any of those laws. All we are doing is amending the camping ordinance to say that sleeping is a human right. You can't deny that from people.
Well, it seems that the...
You need to understand that.
It seems that the police department has said they don't ticket people anyway merely for sleeping. There has to be other illegal activity involved.
So
wouldn't this mean that the police department, in essence, would you be simply codifying what the police department is supposedly doing anyway?
Yeah, basically the police department inadvertently are saying that this law is an unused and obsolete law, and we agree. Or it's obsolete, it's cruel when imposed. The thing is that they can impose it selectively.
Well, I
have a law that has brought...
What I'm saying, David, is that the sleeping ban, since they don't give tickets for just sleeping, that's what you're saying, that they shouldn't give tickets for just sleeping. So in essence, the police department agrees with you, that they shouldn't really have a problem in changing this law because it won't change the way they enforce things.
Well, I think it probably will change the way they enforce things because it gives them the right to go ahead and wake people up three or four times a night without giving them the ticket. With this way, they won't have the right to keep waking people up. Sleep deprivation is a form of torture.
Well, I think you misunderstand me, David. I'm not saying that they're being candid with us.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they're being honest. But if we take them at their face value...
I know what you're saying.
...by saying that, you know, oh, well, we don't give tickets for sleeping anyway, then aren't they in essence saying, yeah, your law is just fine because all your law does is put into practice or put on the books what we do anyway.
So we can sarcastically say, good, then vote for it. We both know that that's a game, and the game they're playing is not a game of truth. they are lying when it comes to that. The chief of police has lied to me. He's telling me that they don't enforce except for the bad behavior. And I've talked to a lot of homeless people who do not practice bad behavior, who are only trying to get a good night's sleep, who are awakened three or four times a night, and usually the fourth time's with a kick.
Interestingly enough, former mayor and actually key vote Michael Rotkin, whose vote could change the sleeping ban without this rather extensive and difficult initiative process, said in a public debate in February up at UCSC that he would seriously consider, or he would actually, I think it was seriously consider, maybe it was actually actively pursue a change in the law, which said that he felt the current practice was only, for example, to ticket on complaint. I know that's not a part of your law, a complaint provision, but it was suggested to him, okay, good, put that through city council and that'll be an improvement. He said he would consider doing that, and when he was last approached 2 weeks ago, he said he had no intention whatsoever of doing that. What do you make of that?
Well, if he was approached by you, Robert, I don't know. If he was approached by a ordinary common citizen who happened to overhear this in the debate, I would like to hear the response.
Perhaps you can approach him and let us know next time.
I will approach him, and I'll try to find out, hey, Mike, what about this warning provision? Of course, the thing about a warning...